Hello and welcome to The Law of Finance. Now, this first introductory podcast is really trying to explain what The Law of Finance is all about. It really is a subject which we are having to create ourselves. If you think about how all law is created, law is really just things that are said by people who have the authority to say them, whether that's legislators or whether that's judges. We spend our time as scholars, we spend our time as practicing lawyers, trying to get to the root of what those rules are and what those rules are all about. There's also another sense in which law is made in common law systems particularly, but not exclusively, and that's through a combination of practice and scholarship. And scholarship needn't be just the preserve of academics here necessarily, although often it is. If you look at some of the grand old books of the English common law, for example, there are books like Chitty's Law of Contract. There are books like Underhill on Trusts. There are books like Snell on Equity, where typically in the Victorian period, sometimes earlier, we have scholars, or typically practitioners as well, trying to pull together all of the disparate principles and rules in areas of law and to explain how they fit together, how they should be understood. And so Chitty plays a very important role, I would suggest, in making contract law by drawing together the principles and making it possible to understand how contract law fits together. And consequently, Chitty, Underhill, Snell, all these books are still in print today. So what I've been trying to do with my book, The Law of Finance, which is published for the first time in 2009, is to try and create finance law in a way. I'm trying to describe it, trying to describe the principles which make it up, try to explain how they should be understood as fitting together. So by studying finance law, you're also going to help create it. You're also going to try and help understand how you think these various principles should fit together. The sources of finance law, primarily, in 2009, are from European Community Directives dealing with financial services, and also then the general law of England and Wales as it applies specifically to the financial context. So I'm thinking of all of this very much from the perspective of English law, and therefore I'm thinking how all of these rules and principles are going to fit together from an English lawyer's perspective. But that's what we're looking to. In later podcasts, I'll talk a bit more about those sources. I just want to think thematically, though, about how the finance law works. The finance law that we're going to consider, the finance law we're going to study together, you and I. And I want to suggest something slightly peculiar. I want to suggest that finance doesn't exist, and therefore that finance law doesn't exist until we create it. Finance doesn't exist in the sense that it has no tangible presence. It doesn't exist in that sense. We have to make it. Finance and financial instruments are created by discussions between traders, discussions between financial institutions and their clients. These things are made up. Finance is made up. Well, you might then say, well, what of money? Surely money has an existence separately. Well, no, I don't think it does. See, the banks themselves have no money. Banks simply have credit lines with other banks. And this was never more obvious than in the great financial crisis 2007 through 2009. Brackets are being optimistic by saying lend in 2009. What we saw in that financial crisis was proof of what lots of us have always said for a very long time, which is a self-evident truth, that these banks do not have cash. Okay? If a bank makes you a loan of £100, that doesn't mean they have a £100 coin somewhere. Rather, in the totality, that bank has a credit line with other banks. It is able to acquire money from other sources. And ultimately, as you look around the system, no one actually has any money anymore. If you go back centuries, coins used actually to be made of precious metal. And they're not anymore. But back in the day, you literally had to have a piece of gold or silver in your hand to say you had a pound's worth of gold. Yes, for that coin to have any worth, it had to be intrinsically valuable. It's not the way anymore. We attribute value. And by attributing value to banks, in the same way that in the United States up to 2007 we were attributing massive values to real property in the United States of America, we create money, we create wealth, simply by a shared understanding that something has a given value. So that's how modern finance works. It doesn't have a tangible existence. And similarly, finance law, it's not a given in the world. We have to assemble it. And we can assemble much of it from financial services directives from the European Union that do deal with financial services specifically. We can assemble it from statutes in the United Kingdom. We can assemble it from case decisions in England and Wales. But we have to put all those elements together and then start to understand how they become the field of finance law. It's a very exciting time to be talking about, studying and writing about finance law, because we really are bringing it together as a field, I would suggest, for the first time. And so the best finance lawyers in practice are creative. It's important to know an enormous amount of various areas of law. It's important to know contract law, property law, tort law, company law, tax law, so on and so forth. Because you need to be able to understand the risks posed to your clients out of those various legal fields, and also to be able to deal with them creatively. To be able to provide, to use the jargon word, solutions for your clients. The more law you know, the more techniques and models you have available to you. And in conflict with other parties, the more weapons you have to hand. So as lawyers coming to finance, I think we need to borrow an important idea from Keanu Reeves, the actor. Actually, it's not an idea we're going to borrow from him at all. The film The Matrix, which starred Keanu Reeves, has one of its pivotal moments when we think Keanu, the hero, is about to die, his character Neo is about to die, and Trinity, the love interest, kisses him and brings him back to life. In the film The Matrix, the conceit is that reality doesn't exist. Rather, the machines have taken over, and every human being is plugged into something called the Matrix. And the human beings are used as batteries to power all the computers, effectively. And all these computers, all these machines, at the same time, create an illusion of reality. So the human beings, even though they're actually all plugged into this horrible dystopian battery thing, are experiencing a reality, because their brains make them think that that's the world in which they're living. Neo, because he's the hero, can see behind this matrix and see things as they really are. And it's the moment when Trinity kisses him that finally he's able to rise from the dead and see things as they really are. And we get a shot standing from behind Keanu Reeves, looking down a corridor in a cheap hotel, and we see the three baddies at the far end in sunglasses and their black suits and black ties. And suddenly Keanu Reeves sees them not as people and not as walls down a corridor, but instead he sees them as binary code. He sees reality as binary code. He sees all the computer coding that creates the matrix, and this is the source of his power, his ability to see this. As lawyers, we're doing a similar thing. We're looking at finance, all of these instruments, all of these transactions that the financiers understand, and we're seeing them as law. We aren't going to see them as baddies at the far end of a corridor wearing sunglasses. We're going to see all of this as contracts, torts, rights to property, purely personal rights, so on and so forth. So that's the key to us, being lawyers coming to finance. We're going to see everything through the lens of law. We're going to understand these things as lawyers. It's going to be our matrix moment. What lawyers really do in practice, I would suggest, is that they act as risk managers. For financiers, law is typically seen as a risk. Lawyers are often seen by many bankers as being people who just get in the way and create problems. It's a way of looking at lawyers that always annoys me. I'll come back to that later. The law is seen as something outside finance, something that's going to get in the way. Because the approach financiers have always had historically is that they want to be operating in free markets, and therefore any law or regulation is kind of a limitation or an incursion on their freedom. In that sense, then, law is a risk. There is another risk, another set of risks we'll talk about in later podcasts, which have to do with what if your counterparty fails to perform in the way you want in a financial transaction. What a lawyer's role there is to create contracts which massage away that risk, which can control that risk, which can give the client a way of getting out of that transaction satisfactorily. So in that sense, lawyers have a very particular role. And risk management is a very important part of banking generally, in that a huge part of what banks do is to measure risk. What's the risk of lending money to this particular person? What's the risk of buying a share in this particular context? How much risk should we take, and how much profit do we need to earn for us to feel we're doing our business satisfactorily? So risk management is an important part of modern finance, and I think lawyers typically, in practice, they're doing that. They're managing risks. I would suggest, however, there is something else about law. There is a creative element to law. What private law does is it offers us models. It says if we create our contracts in this way, the law will support them. If we fail to create our contracts properly, the law won't. But law also gives us lots of structures, partnerships, companies, collective investment schemes, unincorporated associations, so on and so forth. Models we can use and manipulate. The law is full of ideas. And tax lawyers have been doing this for a very, very long time, looking around the law generally and picking up ideas, picking an idea out of the law of leases and using it to avoid a property tax. There's all kinds of things you can do. The law of trust has been very fertile, for example, in helping those who advise on tax avoidance. So we also as finance lawyers have to think of ourselves as being creative thinkers. We're not just about offering shields to banking traders. We can also help to structure transactions. We can help clients to achieve the goals they want. So finance law is in the process of being born, I would suggest, in the early 20th century, sorry, 21st century, I beg your pardon. And so we have to help create it. We have to imagine it to bring it into being. Yes, we're going to help to control and manage risks, but we're going to do so much more besides. It's a very, very creative and exciting area of our law.